Nerdish,
nerdy,
nerd news.
Hi, and welcome to Nerdish, Nerdy, Nerd News. Come along and ride with us as we explore, discuss, and nerd-splain some of the most interesting topics of today.
Hey, I'm Tim. Hung around with nerds a lot growing up, hoping that it would rub off. I think it kind of did, because I'm kind of nerdish. As always, my co-hosts.
Hey, thanks, Tim. I'm Christian. I've been playing and writing, creating games and Dungeons & Dragons since high school. My idea of a relaxing weekend is playing vids with my buds online. I also used to do complex math troubles with my dad for fun. I am very nerdy. And with us, to help us understand the world a little better...
Hi, I'm Jess. I've been programming and using computers since the early 80s. I'm a voracious reader, consistently going through about a half million or more words a month. I've got some biochemistry in my background, and I've been using technology for as long as I can remember. I am...
The Nerd.
No Tim today.
No Tim. We've misplaced the Tim. He's out being a rock star with the Bromantics, so... Yeah.
Poor Tim. I feel bad for him.
I know. He's just having 90-year-old women throw their panties at him.
Yeah. Up there rocking on the stage.
He is a pretty amazing, though. The whole band is, so...
Yeah.
However, we are here with a special guest today, Talon Regent. Esquire, what's your initials at the end of you for being a fancy person like
Juris
you are?
Juris Doctor, is it not?
Juris Doctor, that's correct.
Yes. He is a local lawyer here in Moose Jaw and a pioneer, I would say, in nerd law and doing things the new way.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I always get into a little bit of trouble when I try to innovate, but that doesn't discourage me from trying to find the next way to make the practice of law that much easier, more efficient, or generally better.
I saw you, I think it was like in December 2021, you were at the time, the Court of Queen's Bench, fighting for some new procedures in real estate law.
I was. So even prior to the pandemic, I was already asking questions of people in positions of authority, asking them, why can't we sign documents via video? Why can't we use electronic signatures instead of physical signatures? What's the difference here? What are the security concerns, et cetera, et cetera? And prior to the pandemic, nobody really paid it much mind. They said, this is a young guy who has too much time on his hands. Yeah. And there was no motivation to change.
But you were getting that same response from lawyers your own age.
Yes.
Like not just the old boys white haired club, but it was everyone in the legal community is like, no, this is how we do things.
I shouldn't discount that there were a few that absolutely were on board with mm-hmm. me, but yep. Lawyers are by nature very risk adverse people. And so even the young ones, they said, maybe there might be an opportunity for improvement. But there's also significant risk associated with change. So let's just not do that.
Yeah, it's got to do it the way that it's been tried and true and proven and gone through court 50,000 times so that we know that it's going to work out this way and not change anything, which is normally the definition of
stagnation or...
Yeah, like, if you do something over and over and over again the same way and it doesn't always work that way, isn't that like the definition of crazy or something like that?
But expecting different results.
Oh, yeah, that's...
yeah. And then... all of a sudden comes along the pandemic, mm-hmm. and then everything changes.
Yes.
And so all of a sudden, the legal profession was far more interested in ways that we could practice law without having to be in the same room physically. And all of a sudden, there was this incentive to change and improve and adapt to technology that had been around for a good 20 years. So it was proven technology, but now there was an incentive to bring it into the practice of law.
Exactly.
Finally.
Well, and there's still times when you have to fax something. They won't accept a digital copy, isn't it right?
It kills me. I don't even have a fax machine. I have an app on my computer that accepts faxes to this number and then converts it to me to an email. And then I can send an email that converts itself to a fax. So it's a very arbitrary thing that we still use faxes.
I know. Doctors, physicians, pharmacists, like it just boggles my mind that in a profession where the accuracy of the numbers and letters that they're handwriting and faxing over, they need to be accurate. And they, like, if you put 100 milligrams and they see, oh, it looks like 10 because the fax is only so many pixels, I'm like, that's a huge thing that should be digitized, and in your sake too, like, to not be able to fully read something because the fax didn't come through and missed a period or missed a comma where it should have been.
Where only half the sheet came through or ran out of paper.
Yeah,
or...
But it said the fax went through, so you're good.
Mm-hmm. And I've had all of those issues in my practice.
We all have.
Things coming through 50 dots per inch. Sometimes people will fax something that's it's a two-sided page, but they hit the one-sided option. So now I've got half of an application, and I'm not sure if I need to be rushing around urgently contacting my client or if this is something that can wait for 3 weeks.
Technology.
Yeah, the fax machine is bane. We it took forever for it to be accepted, and now they just won't get rid of it.
But thankfully, you're on the forefront and pushing forward with more digital stuff. Thank you, Talon.
You're welcome. On behalf of legal entrepreneurs everywhere, you're welcome.
And nerds.
Yes.
So, I don't know what to call it, the company or the practice portion or whatever it is that you're doing with that, it's called Easy E-Law.
That's right. And so I practice regent law in Moose Jaw, which represents the physical practice of law, the traditional practice of law. But I also have Easy E-Law, and that represents the virtual realm. And so that's where I will experiment with new emerging technologies and where I'm implementing tried and true technologies that are still considered innovative in the practice of law, like signing documents via video for real estate transactions.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we were just re-looking at that video you did. If anyone wants, look it up. There's a world's first VR signing to transfer physical land. Talon actually did a, was that in Metaverse or was that in your own app that you guys had created for that?
It was in the Metaverse, mm-hmm. and it was in Meta's Metaverse. Mm-hmm. And while I don't endorse them by any means, I much prefer a different virtual reality technology, but it is a simple and easily accessible mm-hmm. one. So as I was trying to convince the videographers and the realtor who assisted me, I wanted to make sure that they could put on the headset mm-hmm. and jump right in. Mm-hmm. And the Meta Oculus Quest, that allowed them to do it.
Mm-hmm. And actually, while looking up some of this stuff too, we saw there was just last month a Colombian court hosted the first legal trial in the metaverse. They did a 2-hour hearing for, I think it was traffic court.
A traffic dispute, yeah.
A traffic dispute between the local constabulary and a person. And yeah, it's fully posted. The full 2-hour session is all in there. And there's some live video, but the live video of... like, I think it was the judge actually, is on a screen in the background, just like they're all watching a movie, but all the others are little animated characters, just like your little video. And so they're actually trying to get that stuff going too. So it was kind of cool to watch.
I seem to remember that you were developing something like that for access to northern communities or people that don't have easy access to legal.
Now, was that a virtual presence lawyer that you were working on, or was that, what was that software you were working on?
So what I had created was called a virtual reality trial simulator.
Oh, okay.
And the goal with that one, the term you were looking for, Jess, is access to justice. And all the time, the legal industry is looking to improve access to justice for mm-hmm. people who can't afford it or can't access it in a timely manner. And in this case, the goal was to improve access to justice for people that didn't have the knowledge or skills to be able to run a trial. And this could be self-represented litigants, mm-hmm. so people that have never been in a courtroom before, or it could be law students, or it could be lawyers that had spent 10 years practicing in an office and had never been in a courtroom, but now wanted to develop those skills. So the way that it worked is that you'd throw on the virtual reality headset and you'd be transported into a courtroom. There would be a judge, there would be a prosecutor, there would be witnesses, evidence available, and there were three different simulations you could run. One for a traffic ticket, one for a murder trial, and one for a divorce. And so this, in my mind, was going to be able to allow people to hone their skills of how to tender evidence, how to cross-examine people, when to object and why to object. And all of those things came together to create a fantastic educational tool for people.
Well, what do you, like, I know we've talked about this before, but I said to you, I'm like, well, how did you get, like, did you guys not have mock courts and practice courts in university to do all that with actual people? And I think the words out of your mouth was, no, pretty much the first time I was in a court was the first time I was in a court. And I'm like, oh. Like,
yeah, in law school, you had to take a very specific class in order to get trial advocacy skills. And in fact, the class was called trial advocacy. Mm-hmm. So we did that, but it was in a very controlled environment. It was in a classroom mm-hmm. that was, they had set up the little podiums to yeah. kind of reflect
the courtroom. No one's real life yeah. is in, yeah. in your hands. mm-hmm.
And so the first time I ran an actual full-blown trial was a real trial with a real client's life and future in the balance. Mm-hmm. And luckily in that case, it was a successful trial. Mm-hmm. But that's not always the experience no. that every lawyer has fresh out of law school.
And that's not just you. That's every lawyer everywhere has that same nightmarish.
So with that software that you develop, they get, at least get the understanding, like, this is how it's going to proceed. It's not a surprise when, you know, something happens, you see procedure, you see, which is more than just like sitting in a classroom and reading about it or going through it on an overhead. You actually get to experience it where you're the person in there and you're saying, you know, I object, or here's the presentation of the information and evidence and what have you, and you get to do all your other arguments and such. And so that gives the new lawyer that, or someone who's trying to get some court experience, it gives them that understanding.
And beyond just giving them the understanding, it also gives them feedback. Mm-hmm. So I gamified the experience a little bit. And one of the things that the judge will do at the end of the simulation is grade you. And so you'll get a certain grade based on how closely and how properly you followed procedure, and based on best practices of how you should be examining and cross-examining witnesses. It will give you that feedback to say, well, you know, if you're cross-examining a hostile witness, you shouldn't ask them open-ended questions because then they can give a really bad answer. So you should ask your questions in this way instead. Mm-hmm. And so by getting that feedback, you can then rerun the simulation over and over and over mm-hmm. again and ask better questions, time your objections mm-hmm. more effectively, and develop those skills fully.
Well, and it's not and if you're doing that in a software scenario like that, you're not limited by, like you said, the trial advocacy class, was that?
Yes, the trial advocacy class is part of a university law yeah. degree program, which is going to be very cost prohibitive.
And very time intense, because like you've got to do each upcoming lawyer, as an individual case in that class. So you're looking at days just for them to run their mock trial. Whereas, you know, a software program like this, you can do over and over again and hone your skills.
Yeah.
And level up. Do you get prizes for leveling up?
You know, I thought about taking the gamification that far. And in fact, I had created another version, which was just very much a game. Like in the murder trial, there would be the gun there and there would be the loaded ammo clip. And you could take it and you could load the gun and start shooting it off in the courtroom. And then you'd get a game over because all the security is rushing you and now you're in jail.
But if you do really good, you get the nice purple tie.
The coveted purple tie that all lawyers seek in their yeah. career.
So, I mean, we've kind of been delving into that type of stuff on our own. Now, some of our kind of questions that we got actually from a couple of our friends here was like moving into VR, virtual reality, AR, augmented reality, and VP, virtual presence. A lot of this stuff now, like, do you know much about the laws that are coming out for those, or how that's going to be preceded in the legal system? Like, if you are on a VR with a client or something like that. And or if you're just me and Jess are in VR together and he starts just harassing me in the metaverse constantly, harassing, sexually harassing, sending me lewd pictures of himself like he does already. But in VR.
I have my clothes on.
You know, like, how are they, do you know, like, are there laws coming out that are going to start helping people to police that?
So there's two different tracks to that conversation. And one is the laws that already exist. Mm-hmm. And for those, I often tell people, don't overthink it. There are already laws in place that deal with how to stop somebody who's harassing you from continuing to harass you. There's civil remedies that you can seek. There are criminal remedies that you can seek in certain situations, depending on how lewd those photos Jess is sending you actually happen to be.
I'll send them to you.
But and so that's sort of the boring answer, mm-hmm. because that doesn't require all sorts of legislative change and the politicians needing to go in and micromanage things. Mm-hmm. But the more interesting component is the rules that are being created by the companies that host mm-hmm. their metaverse or hosting their universe.
Their user agreements.
Exactly. And their terms and conditions and those really big, long documents that nobody ever reads, but they are very, very important. Mm-hmm. And they can be important for that governance model because they're now the ones that control what is defined as harassment, what is defined as lewd. And they define, they're the judge, the jury, and the executioner.
Yeah, all wrapped into one with no trial.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's sort of like you're playing in our sandbox, so you play by our rules. Yeah.
Yes, and that is just fine if there are lots of sandboxes to play in. Mm-hmm. But if there's a monopoly that owns this technology, and there's only one sandbox, and they control the rules for every kid on the playground, that can be awfully problematic.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if the legal community is... had any cases that have come out of that? Like,
oh yeah.
I mean, there's, I mean, you've got, like you said, you've got Meta and Metaverse, and you've got, I'm trying to think of any.
Well, there's the Metaverse. There's various like,
but I mean, right
HTC,
now,
HTC Vive, which is through Steam, I believe, has their own virtual
presence
and realities that you can go into in like party modes or whatever you want to call them. And yeah. I'm sure PlayStation has it. And
a couple of the most popular ones that I'm aware of include Rec Room, which mm-hmm. you can even go onto Rec Room on your cell phone. And then there's one called VR Chat, which is also a very popular one. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of those ones, so there might be more out there than I'm aware of. But those are examples of other sandboxes mm-hmm. aside from Meta.
Right.
But Meta does have the biggest one. And even just by the fact of scale, they have a lot of the emerging legal issues that mm-hmm. then come with that, where people will be banned for something that they deem to be arbitrary. And so I can't say there are two specific examples with the metaverse, but two that I'm aware of with these VR communities are things like being banned for making what the company defines to be inappropriate comments around transgendered people mm-hmm. or inappropriate comments regarding the war between Russia and Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And so again, when I talk about not overcomplicating things, these are also issues that you'll encounter on Twitter or Reddit or right. other.
And but part of that, and people have to understand that some of that is, I can't remember what they're called. I'm really fuzzy today. The Canadian rights.
Let me see. I'll rub your head.
The Canadian rights. They're the protected classes.
Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Yes. They're the whatever it is, the 12 or 20 protected classes. You know, sex, creed.
Oh, the Code of Human Rights.
Yeah. So there's those, which is the transgender one. So it would be covered under that. But then the comments on the conflict that's in Russia and Ukraine could be considered free speech. Mm-hmm. So... It just becomes very murky.
But now, at least, like, and so the problem I see with this is jurisdiction now. Because now you're talking about a global community not just a Canadian community, right. not just a U.S. community. So that's where those ULAs or user mm-hmm. agreements really come into play. And they've got to look at the, and hopefully the companies do look at the bigger picture of this is a global community and we should respect the laws of all the countries that are involved in this, not just the country that we reside in.
Except that things get equally interesting when you have states like California that require that tech companies have a certain set of values. But you hop across the pond to the European Union and they've created laws that say that tech companies have to have a certain set of values. Mm-hmm. And now, if those sets of values don't align, yeah. do those companies then have to create separate sandboxes mm-hmm. for North Americans, Europeans, Asians, or do they have to try to navigate them or appeal to the appropriate jurisdiction Supreme Court? Those are the tough questions.
But I think that's where even a lot of games, they've done that. You know, like you connect to the North American servers when you're playing Call of Duty because you want to play with other English speakers who are playing at the same time as you. And they're governed by the North American ULA agreements. Whereas, you know, the South Korean or the Asian, those types of server groups, you're going to find your like-minded people. And I think the gaming industry is pushed that way already, so I can't imagine the sandboxes being any different when it comes to the metaverse and things like this. Speaking of kind of funny precedents, there was it's sad and funny, but I was reading up on a story here. There was a claim of a virtual sexual harassment claim by Nina Jane Patel, vice president of metaverse research for Kabuni Ventures, an immersive technology company. Within 60 seconds of joining, I was verbally and sexually harassed, Patel wrote. 3 to 4 male avatars with male voices, essentially, but virtually, gang-raped my avatar and took photos. 2 months later in February, Meta announced its implementation of a 4-foot virtual personal boundary around all avatars operating in its Horizons world and the Horizon venues. Personal boundary prevents avatars from coming within a set distance of each other, creating more personal space for people and making it easier to avoid unwanted interactions, read the Meta quote that Oculus updated. So, I mean, there's a thing where they're policing themselves because something inappropriate happened and they realized their software was being exploited. Now, that's that company, but is it going to happen to all? And that's where we get into the legal ramifications of that. If the company doesn't police themselves and they just left that wide open like that, is that something that we as a civilization pursue suing them?
I think it's something where each platform needs to have their EULA. Is that it? EULA? Whatever, the agreement.
Legal agreement?
Yeah, I think that's mm-hmm. what it is. And their policies and such. Because if that's happening, then they're going to lose, like, as soon as that became commonplace, they're going to lose a lot of their customers because mm-hmm. who wants to go on there then? So they have sort of a drive to do it, but it's an after the fact where it needs to be proactive if they can.
And for me, I don't think you will see a solution, but for reducing anonymity. Because in the case of Meta and creating this 4-foot boundary, that solves the physicality of mm-hmm. it. But somebody can stand outside that 4-foot boundary and still slew insults at you.
Yes.
But if they understood that their actions on this platform were being monitored, their identity was known, maybe this was being recorded, mm-hmm. and I'm guessing that it's a bunch of 14-year-olds that
yeah.
are doing it.
yeah.
But if that 14-year-old knew that the recording of that event could be sent to their mother,
yes.
maybe they would think about it. And so there has yeah. to be that punishment element.
Or they get a visit from the local constabulary saying, yeah. This is incorrect. You shouldn't be doing this. Mm-hmm. This is your only warning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Next time you're going to have to do some community service. Yeah. And so that brings in sort of a a criminal philosophy element where we talk about policing, but we don't just police in society. There's a whole criminal justice system that starts with policing, and then you get into the courtroom, and then you get into sentencing, and then you get into the correctional section after somebody's been found guilty. And so I think there has to be some of that punishment component mixed in with the rehabilitation, where if somebody's doing this, you can ban them. Maybe that's the punishment. It doesn't necessarily rehabilitate them. But if you don't have that mechanism in place to correct that individual's actions moving forward, you can try to expand that 4-foot boundary to 8 feet to 12 feet, but it's going to keep happening.
No, and I mean, we see this in online games all the time. Like, I keep hearkening back to that because it's what we know. You'll have a user and you know he's on Twitter or YouTube or Discord, and you follow him on his Twitch account and watch him play, and he gets banned from one software, and a week later he's back on that same software with a different username and a different email address doing the same thing he was doing the week before. And then that account gets banned and he moves on. And it's just, that's where I think we're going to try and force these companies into...
Because there's such anonymity and the consequences are not really there.
Mm-hmm. Now this ties into another piece of legal tech, which is something that can be hotly debated, which is the idea of centralizing the government's knowledge of each individual. So I've got a social insurance number, I've got a passport number, I've got a health card number, I've got numbers for things I don't even know that I've got numbers for. And all of these different departments of the government have a little sliver of my information. But if we centralized all of that and provided somebody access to it based on their biometrics or based on a complex password, but then I could log on to my own portal and update my passport photo, see what prescriptions I need to take out, having all of that available. If we did that, we could then allow external companies a very small window of access into that.
To verify
people's identities when they're hopping onto different platforms. Mm-hmm. And that can be for virtual reality. Mm-hmm. It could be for criminal justice. It could be for getting a new bank card, checking your credit.
And we sort of do that right now. It's kind of, well, it's not, sorry, it's the CRA, the Canadian Revenue Agency, I think it's called, or whatever. Yep. When you go to log into their web portal, you can use one of their partner portals. So I can go to my bank and use my bank login information to prove that I am who I am.
Yeah.
Instead of having to have another different login account for them and for each and every other one. So, that's sort of what I think you're sort of talking about there, where you have multiple different ways, but this is, I'm proving I'm me, and then it gets me into the area that I need to be. And with that company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so I see that as a very small step in the right direction. Maybe we're going to get there eventually. But I look forward to it. And for those who don't like the idea, their biggest argument is...
Tim would be saying, well, now Big Brother's got all my info.
The robots will be coming for me.
And he's not wrong. Like, you listen to all these hacks of this, and this got hacked, and this got accessed, and now you put all your eggs in one basket, essentially. It's much easier to hack into that.
It's that, how do you protect that information from people who shouldn't be accessing it?
Yeah, the nefarious people.
And this brings us back full circle to what I was mentioning at the beginning, where lawyers are naturally very risk adverse, and maybe there's opportunities, but with change comes risk, so why bother?
Yeah, well, and I mean, I look at it too nowadays. There's so many insurances in place. Like, if my info's out there and someone steals it and does something with it, I come to you. I come to my bank and say, hey, I'm not in Mexico right now charging $10,000 a day to my name. I'm here. I have proof I've been here. Let's deal with this. And most, it's not like it's, oh, well, I've never heard of that happening. It's an everyday occurrence, you know, identity theft. So,
yeah.
And on the idea of, you know, Tim and the robots, have you looked at any of the the ARs, or not the ARs, the AIs and laws of robots and things like that? Have you done any? I'm sure you have.
I absolutely have. And as at the time of recording this, it's going to be less than a month from now, I'm going to be making a presentation to a bunch of other real estate lawyers about how they can use artificial intelligence to make their practice more efficient. And so in addition to using some of the AI that's already available, something that I'm just getting into is trying to train my own AI models so that I can create an AI lawyer to replace me, and then I can maybe sit on a beach somewhere in Mexico.
So that actually segues perfectly into the next topic that we have here, is AI copyright and ownership.
Mm.
So there has been a lot of controversy in on the internet now about, well, there's several different companies, but one of them is ChatGPT.
Have you had a chance to use it yet?
Yes, I've used it a few times. There are a couple of other lawyers that know that I use it.
Does it write better closing arguments than you?
Well, I ask it to write closing arguments for me, but write it in the tone of a sassy Instagram teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have not been bold enough to submit any of those to a judge just yet.
No, I did the same with Keaton was doing a project, and it was on Amethyst, and he'd done all the work, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to see what this ChatGPT can do. And I'm like, ChatGPT, create me a report on Amethyst. And then it did it, and I'm like, okay, that's not bad. Now create it as if I were a 9-year-old boy. And it had, like, swapped out all the, like, the more descriptive words for cool and neato. And and then I'm like, okay, since he's in French immersion, translate to French. And it did everything. And yeah. I translated it back, and it was almost word for word. I'm like, oh, this is scary. Like, for teachers, for...
Yeah. So one of the ones that you can go to, and I can't remember what it's called. I'd have to look it up. You go to it, and you basically, like ChatGPT, is you would type into it, create a picture of a dog with a cape flying through the air in New York. Mm-hmm. And it would draw that.
Oh, yeah. That was that AI artist one. Yeah.
And there's a few of them that do that. Now, there's huge litigation going on against them right now, because all of the data set that they use are pictures that have been pulled off the internet, whether they are free or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so the argument is this a derivative, or is it
original?
And who owns it if it is? And all of these different things. So, like, under Canadian law, how would that work?
Yeah, so as we start on that, I just want to give a big plug for Stable Diffusion. That
yes.
is the open source option. So anyone can go, and if you've got a good enough graphics card, you can download Stable Diffusion, generate whatever yep. kinds of images you want.
I think that's the one I was trying to remember, actually, mm-hmm. yeah.
And I've got it on my own computer, and I've experimented with it. I've actually generated images that now appear on my Facebook feed for my company. So I don't want to pay for a stock photo of somebody in a suit that looks like a lawyer signing a picture.
Right.
And so I've asked Stable Diffusion to generate that image for me. But right to what you were saying, Jess, it generates that image, but it generates that having been trained on all of these stock photos.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten away with not paying for any of those stock photos, and those stock photo companies are not happy. So how would that work in Canadian law? I can't tell you with any certainty, because this is now one of those new areas. But what I like to bring it back to, again, I try to create analogies between new and emerging technology and what we already know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ask people, how do you know what you know? You've read books, you've gone online, you've had worldly experience to such an extent that you can't even really tell me why it is. If you look at a piano, how do you know that that's a piano? You can't think of the first time you ever saw a piano and somebody told you that's a piano and come back to that. You've seen so many pianos in so many different settings,
you
styles.
You just recognize it. Yeah.
You just know what it is. And so when you ask artificial intelligence, produce for me the image of a piano, it's the same thing. And so those stock photo companies can say, oh, well, I mean, we've got 10,000 stock photos of a piano. Mm-hmm. But artificial intelligence had access to 10 million other open source pictures mm-hmm. of those of a piano.
Yeah.
So did those stock photos have much, if any, impact? Maybe.
Does
maybe
it look
not.
Similar to one yeah, of like, their particular stock photos? Probably, because a piano is a piano is a piano is a piano.
Mm-hmm. One of the arguments I've had online where and I'm one of those stupid people that argues with other people online. I know it's just
down the Reddit rabbit
down
hole.
The rabbit hole. Yeah, but one of the things was they said, you know, this they were on the side that this is copyright infringement because they're using artwork that they didn't have permission to use. But my response is, okay, well, you're an artist. Okay, Talon, you're an artist right now. And I say, I want you to draw me a Billy Dong. Okay, whatever that is. You don't know what it is. So what are you going to do? You're going to go on the internet and you're going to look it up. And you're going to get 5,000 pictures of whatever the heck that thing is. Okay, and you're going to go, okay, yeah, I could do this. And you're going to look at all these pictures and then you're going to draw what I asked for. And then you're going to hand it to me and I'm going to go, yeah, that looks pretty good. Or I'm going to say, no, I want you to do it in the style of Van Gogh. And you'll be, oh, okay. So you'd go back and you'd look at some bunch of Van Gogh pictures and you'd be like, okay, yeah, so that's how he does it. And then you'd look at that other picture and you'd be like, okay, I can change it so it's like this. And then you'd do it. That's what AI is doing. It's exactly the same thing. It's no different than that. Hmm. The only difference is that it's using transistors instead of brain cells.
Yeah. And it's doing it a whole heck of a lot faster. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be putting all sorts of different industries out of work. So human beings who are in those industries have a vested interest in trying to slow down mm-hmm. the development of this technology or the accessibility of this technology, mm-hmm. lawyers included, mm-hmm. Because
you need to set up the rules that govern these technologies. Because I mean, I look at this ChatGPT and you, like you guys are talking about the images, but I'm talking about this is like IP and stuff. Well, how do teachers and educators differentiate this stuff now from what the actual kids?
There are actually websites that are free websites that you can take this document. Like, so if a kid submits an essay, you mm-hmm. load the essay in. And it will determine if it was created by an AI or not to a certain... It'll say, like, this is 97% created by an AI.
But that's an AI telling you that. Yes. Can you trust it?
But, I mean... And
it's, but there's tools.
There are tools, but the technology for the abuse is ahead of the technology for the teachers and the educators to be able to use it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean... We know that. We're the nerds of the world. We know that that stuff exists and that there's a way to do it. But for them, like, it's just mind-boggling. Like,
now, an interesting conversation that I had recently with a teacher was the question of whether or not we really need to be checking on that. And so it's they presented a similar argument to the calculator because they've been a teacher long enough. Mm-hmm. They had that argument about whether or not kids should be allowed calculators, in what grade should they mm-hmm. be allowed
at
calculators.
At what level of math, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so now it seems to be the same question, mm-hmm. where this tool is out there. It's already been released. We can't put the genie back in the bottle. And so the question becomes, at what age do we allow for it? Or should we just allow it at all ages? And rather than focusing on whether or not somebody's using a piece of technology to predict text, instead, look at the critical thinking components. Mm. Look at the ideas that the student has had to come up with in order to request that the essay be written. So mm-hmm. the assignments change.
Well, and that's what I think you say. Like, that's where the assignments need to be more like critical thinking, more difficult, essentially, because the AI is doing the simple part. It's doing the 1+1 for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they can skip that step. Well, then if they're going to skip that step, they need to be going on to the next step.
And right. And if you take something like an essay, say about... I had to write, I don't know how many essays in school growing up because all we ever took for history of Canada was the Dirty 30s and the fur trade. So, you know, I've read whatever is in Robert Burton's books like 50,000 times. But, you know, you get that essay handed in and then the teacher says, okay, before when you would go and present your essay, you'd read your 500-word essay to the class and that would be that. Now you go up and the teacher asks you questions based off of your essay. Well, if you didn't read it and understood the content, you're not going to be able to answer the questions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how you get the understanding. It's just the fact that you have the understanding.
Yeah, it's the getting of the understanding. But, I mean, that's where the education system needs to change back to the old ways of, like, being in touch with their students, not just right. taking assignments. You know, university, high school, even elementary school, for them to be more person to person, which again is going to have to come down to funding, which is going to have to come down to smaller classrooms, which we've been fighting
many,
for decades.
Many like, long.
I mean, both yes. Jess and I have parents who were teachers for 40 plus years.
Mm.
And the fight that they had with the system to keep those classrooms small.
Yeah. When you have a classroom that's got 30 kids in it for one teacher.
Yeah.
Even if they have an aide, that doesn't matter. It's not enough one-on-one. It's not enough for that. But mm-hmm. getting
especially
back to the,
with this.
Yeah, getting back to this. Like so it really hasn't been tested in Canada yet, the AI content and who owns it and copyright and things like that, has it?
Yeah, it hasn't been tested in Canada. It also hasn't been tested in the United States. And while I'm a Canadian lawyer and it hurts me to say it, whatever happens in Canada is not going to be very impactful. It's what happens in California and what happens when that case gets to the United States Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, it will go to the Supreme mm-hmm. Court.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And because that is so much larger an economy than ours, and because it's the tech center of the world, that is going to be where the law
set
develops.
The precedent for the rest of the world kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So currently, Canada has several things in place to provide, like for example, when cassettes, audio cassettes first came out that you could record on them, Canada put in place, I don't know, we call it a tariff, basically, where you paid a couple bucks extra that went into a fund and that went to creators and musicians and whatever to pay for the fact that, you know, people are going to be copying their music. The same thing happened when we got CDs and DVDs. We paid a few extra bucks. What do you think is going to happen now, just off the top of your head, with this, where you could have artists, like there's already ChatGPT or other programs that can do programming. They can do music. They can do, you know, like not just the words, but the actual music behind the whole song. Mm-hmm. They do artwork. They do. How do you think do you think that's going to be something that's possible?
I do. I think it's possible. And I think the solution can go down two different chains, whether it goes down the capitalist road or it goes down the socialist road. And so I can envision one direction where we head down the capitalist road, and basically the artists are told, too bad, so sad, innovate. Mm-hmm. Innovation. I don't know what that mm-hmm. means. I don't know how that happens, but that's up to you to innovate. And that sounds cruel and perhaps a little bit silly, but that is what happens every time. And we have instruments that exist today that never existed 40, 50 years ago, because we have more technology. The whole idea of a DJ as a profession, as a musician, mm-hmm. didn't exist mm-hmm. 100 years ago. And so that is an example of innovation in more of that capitalistic vein. Alternatively, there's the socialist vein, which I think would be more in line with what Canada had done in the past, where we then see more subsidies going towards these arts in order to ensure that they continue to exist. And both have their pros and cons. I think going down the direction where we provide subsidies certainly helps to maintain tradition and cultural practices that Canada is so desperately trying to establish in the first place, to figure out who the heck we are and what we're all about.
Maintain that in the with the threat of the Americans overwhelming the media as it is. So mm-hmm. not just Americans, like the world is like, it's not just Canada, it's other countries too.
And now K-pop's coming after us.
Yeah.
It's hard to get our own footing in the, on the world stage.
Well, and it's not a new thing that they know, like that AI is creating music, because for 20 years they've known what chords are the rock chords.
Yeah.
They're the chords that make people want to listen to that song. And they've been doing it for 20 years and mass producing that music. So whether the songs were written by an AI or fully created with lyrics and voices with AI, I mean, look at Vanilla Ice. They had people dubbing over voices. Well, now that's standard practice. So if they'd just been born 20 years later, they'd be still rock stars out there doing what every rock star does and just doing voiceovers with other people.
And, you know, that raises a really good point that pop music has not changed much in a long time.
No.
And maybe this emerging technology is what we need to finally kickstart our musical culture.
A new genre, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for an example there, Christian, there's actually a group called the Axie of Awesomeness. And they made a song called Four Chords. And the musical component is just four chords.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that they'll do is they change these four chords might change slightly in what
their tempo,
the arrangement.
The arrangement's the same.
Oh, yeah.
It's exactly the same. But it's
The tempo or the instruments that are playing those chords.
He's doing it on a piano. Mm-hmm. Constantly, it's just these four chords going up mm-hmm. and down different. I can't remember what it's called. Anyways, and they start singing different songs in the background, and there are all kinds of like. There's like 20, 30 different songs that use the same four chords.
Oh yeah.
But so that... if you want to hear, go just look up the Axies of Awesomeness four chords, and it is you'd be surprised.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm not, because I've been in the music industry. I know, like, there's certain chords that invoke a feeling in people. You do a dissonant chord, the hair on the back of your neck stands up, because it's like, it's not right. It just seems wrong. You have two people who sing out of tune to each other. You everyone gets that cringe and eye twitch, and it's like, oh my God, they're horrible. That's that same, you can invoke feelings just from the sound. And if they can get, and when, like you do, the four chords, when you get those four chords, it just invokes, it creates the chemical balances in the brain. The cerebellum does what it's supposed to do and releases the happy hormones, and away you go.
Yeah. I'm not much for musical theory, but if AI is going to give me an alternative to modern day pop, and give me something other than love and anti-love songs. I don't want to hear about your boyfriend, and I don't want to hear about how you broke up with your boyfriend. Give me something unique.
Yeah, yeah. But that reminds me. That reminds me of a joke here. What happens when you play a country song backward?
What happens?
You get your dog back. You get your car back. You get your girlfriend back.
Where's your little laugh button on there? There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true, though. But yeah, really, I mean, we've covered a lot here today, and it's been fun chatting with you again, Talon, and reaching out with you. What other things are up in your... Well, we'll go back to actually real life, and what's your life and nerd life? And
yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to my work life, I mentioned it, but I never did get into much detail with the artificial intelligence lawyer that I'm building. So it's based off the ChatGPT model. And then I'm training it specifically on all of my precedents, so I don't have to worry about any copyright claims from other lawyers.
Is it a him, he, or she, he, or
it's
they?
It's a they.
I think we just need to go with it.
Yeah.
And it may not be happy about that, but well, we need to avoid personification.
Yeah,
we need to avoid thinking of artificial intelligence as somebody mm-hmm. with feelings and emotions
mm-hmm.
until that ever does actually happen. And we are quite a far cry from that, despite what some Google employee thought about it. But I'm training it on my precedents from all my years of practice. So I've got hundreds, if not thousands, of wills, real estate transactions, shareholders agreements, incorporation documents. And so I'm training it in each of these individual areas of law. And then I'm going to develop a chat system where somebody can talk with my chatbot online, get their will developed, and then in order for me to comply with my law society regulations, mm-hmm. and in order to give them the peace of mind, they will still meet with mm-hmm. me either physically or via video in order to review the documents, make sure it properly aligns with what they're looking right. for, mm-hmm. and then execute the documents.
But I mean, is that really any different than a legal aid or a legal assistant that you would have in your office that would be doing those documents up? It's kind of like the doctor versus nurse thing. Like 90% when you go to the ER, you're sitting with a nurse for 95% of the time. Then the doc comes in and goes, yep, that's right.
Well, the problem with, or not the problem, but the interesting thing with AI is that it's actually having more of a top-down, not dysfunction, disruption. Mm-hmm. It's having a top-down disruption where the lawyers may actually get replaced faster than the legal assistants. And so,
well,
isn't
that kind of true as it is? You know, really, your legal assistants do like 60 or 70% of the work, and then you just sort of swoop in there and take that and finalize it, don't you?
But that 30% that the lawyer does right now
and that's being generous.
Is the really complex
yes.
part.
Yes, yes.
And it's also the verification to make sure that
the legal assistant did it properly. Yeah, your license is on the line, not hers.
Yes, my insurance, and my $10,000 deductible.
Honestly, if that's the way it goes, if it goes where the legal aid or the assistant does the portion of work, and then you have your easy e-law where the person goes on there and they put in all the information that goes to your legal aid. Legal aid takes what that AI has done and gets it ready for you, which might not be a lot of work. It might just be checking and double checking for some stuff. And then she hands it to you, and you as the expert goes through that and makes sure that it's correct. Because even ChatGPT says, when you go onto it to type something in, it says, this may not be correct.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do not trust it in its current iteration or its next one after that.
When you've done training it, you're still going to have to check it because it might mistake will for real estate, and you'll get something in there like, what the heck is that? And you'd have to correct it because it's mistaken that.
Yeah, I mean, a prime example is when I'll ask it certain questions, it'll spit out an answer with regards to the Real Estate Act. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have a Real Estate Act.
Right.
Ours is called the Land Titles Act. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't know that, and it is confidently wrong. But into the future,
as it trains and gets to know better where it is and what laws apply to it and what don't, I could see something like that being your insurance company goes, okay, are you using the AI verifier for your law or not? Oh, you're not? Okay, then your insurance premium is.
And for anyone that's thinking AI will replace lawyers,
no,
that's not going
lawyers
to happen.
Lawyers won't let it happen.
But it just won't. It won't be good enough in our lifetime. No. But what will happen is lawyers using AI will replace lawyers that are not using AI, mm-hmm. and will have more efficiency so that with regards to access to justice, mm-hmm. one lawyer might be able to do five times as much work. Mm-hmm. And so then either they can charge five times more money, or more realistically, they'll do the same work for 20% of the price, and they'll take home the same amount of pay.
Because five times more customers.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. But
and
I mean,
so that's going to make it more affordable.
Just being able to reference the library of precedents and stuff like
that. Like
that's the part I look at.
When you go to look for something and you're like, you know, I wonder if there's precedent on this, and you type it in and it comes back from its library saying, yeah, this v this, and this is the decision that was made. You can go, oh, now that's where I need to look.
Yeah. And I do use it for research, not ChatGPT, but there are already lawyer-specific mm-hmm. tools out there.
Yeah.
And
but where an AI programmed with that gives you exponentially more
because it could also mm-hmm. pull out of that, not just say, well, it's this v. this, and then you have to go dig in it. It could actually pull out the relevant relevant section that you'd want to. Mm-hmm. So you'd have a much more drill down and not as much work.
And there's one lawyer-specific tool coming, or that is already out, and they're continuing to fine-tune it, which will not only pull out the relevant paragraphs, but it'll draft the persuasive brief of law to hand to the judge. And there are already these tools available, and the companies are trying to pay lawyers to not actually write their own briefs. They want you to go into the courtroom wearing a little earpiece and just dictate what the AI is typing
now,
to you.
Now, would that be legal?
Is that legal in the Canadian?
Could you right now go into...
We've seen that on TV.
Yeah, like what was that show? Bull. They used to do that all the time. But is that legal? Because now you're not actually... You are not actually representing that person. It's whoever is in that earpiece.
Yeah, and so that would be considered a delegation of duty or a derogation of duty. It's negligence. I would get in a lot of trouble if I was doing that because whoever's feeding me this information, they don't have the competency. I have the competency.
Right. And if another lawyer on, like, let's say your team, and he wasn't able to be present.
Yeah, that would be fine.
Because that would be part of the remote.
And that's kind of what I was thinking. Presence. That's where I was going to kind of go too, is I know you can have the virtual presence of a computer screen with your lawyer on your computer screen right next to you, but here you could have a junior practicing partner sitting in the sitting in the court while you're sitting, like you said, on the beach.
Sorry, I giggled because I immediately visualized one of those iPads mounted.
Oh yeah, that's what we're thinking when we're thinking. Segway. Yeah, yeah, that's our virtual presence because then you can pace back and
drive back and forth. You could come up to the jury or
and
lean over.
Yeah. make it more dramatic.
Yeah, as I'm cross examining with increased intensity, leaning over the witness box. Yeah,
and normally when you say something and you look quickly at the person to see what their response is, and have that segue just do that. 180 degree turn in like a half second.
Yeah, but all you're doing is looking at the other segues in the gallery. I can just see Talon's segue battle. His comes in with like tasers on it. Oh, your segue's down. Oh, I'm so sorry.
So I now there is a great idea for something to put in one of those terms and conditions, EULAs. Mm-hmm. If you end up in a dispute with somebody else in the sandbox in the metaverse, mm-hmm. BattleBots.
Yes. Yes.
BattleBots resolves the issue.
Trial by combat.
BattleBot combat.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, it sounds like there's a lot of exciting stuff coming and it sounds like you're kind of on the forefront of them. So that's really, it's awesome to have you as a friend and well, basically as our lawyer. we're looking forward to what you bring forward, and I'm sure we'll probably have you on again at some point when you break new ground. So
yeah, absolutely. I love talking about all of it. Cryptocurrency, blockchains, VR, yeah. AI. So I'm into all of it.
So if you're interested in having Talon help you out with your legal issues, where would they go?
You can visit me at easyelaw.ca.
There we go. Or you can go to his physical location in Moose Jaw in the Hammond building.
414-310 Main Street North, Moose Jaw.
There you go. Well, thanks again, Talon.
Yeah, thank you very much.
It was fantastic to be here, guys, and great show.
Thanks again for letting us into your ear holes with this nerdish, nerdy nerd news podcast. Check out our website at wildshot.ca.
You can find us on all the socials under Nerdish Nerdy Nerd News. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also subscribe and support us at patreon.com/nerdish to get more bonus content, show notes, and merch.
If you'd like to send us topics for future episodes or comment about our existing ones, please email us info@wildshot.ca. And remember, stay nerdy.
Nerdish, nerdy, nerd news.